At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Missing minerals? 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps restore what your body's missing, naturally supporting mood, energy, and immunity. Get yours now at traceminerals.com. Feel off, tired, moody? You might be missing minerals because 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps support energy, mood, and immunity from the inside out. Go to traceminerals.com and feel the difference minerals make.
This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi. Up to segment number 5. Let's head to the courtroom.
Jury is present, sir.
All right, thank you. May proceed.
John Marvin, were you aware of a news release that was issued that morning, Tuesday, June 8th, that the public had no need to be alarmed or concerned for their safety?
Yes, sir.
Well, what was your reaction to that?
I mean, it's quite baffling. It still is. Two people have been killed, and they're telling me that everybody's safe. That tells me that whoever's done this is in jail, and they are 100% positive. Because if they're not in jail, nobody's safe.
Right. Did you go back to the residence at Moselle after finding the phone? Did you go back up to the house?
Yes, sir, I did.
And did SLED agents come through and search it while you were present?
They did. I don't know how long I'd been back up there, but they came and we kind of talked in the playroom, or I think some have described it as the gun room. They talked about that they needed to come in the house and search for things.
And did you escort, I think it was Agent McAllister, throughout the house?
Yes, it was Katie McAllister.
And did she tell you what she was looking for?
Initially, she says, the way she presented it was, you know, there were so many people in the house. She said, listen, I don't want to just go barging in and make everybody run out of the house, but I'm going to take my badge off, my gun off, and if you would, just walk me through each room. And, you know, particularly I'm looking for 12-gauge shotgun, guns, and 300 blackout, and the ammunition for those calibers.
And as you're walking through the house with her, it appeared she was looking for other things besides just guns.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could tell she's looking because she looked in spaces that guns wouldn't fit. So it makes sense that she could be looking for something else.
Such as what?
Well, I don't know.
I understand, but you said spaces. Did she look in the bathrooms?
I opened up up in the upstairs area. There's some cabinets that, you know, a couple of them are pretty small that, you know, she could find ammunition in there, but I don't know how you would get a gun in there.
Did she search bathrooms?
She did. Well, I took her through every room in the house.
Right.
I mean, every single room.
Did you observe her looking in sinks and toilets?
Yes, sir. What I observed is, like, the shower, for example, it's a door. It's not an open shower. She opened the door, and she looked around, and, you know, she was looking at. She easily would have known there was no gun in it when she opened it, but it was obvious that she was looking a little deeper.
Right. What kind of guns were there at Moselle?
Well, it sounds like the guns of all kinds, rifles, shotguns. I've seen bow and arrows. I've seen crossbows. Most anything that you would hunt with.
All right. And were guns mostly in the gun room, when, to your knowledge, when you were over there?
Well, when I went through the house, we identified, I remember one gun in particular that was in the bedroom, a shotgun. I picked it up and said, you need to take this one. And we looked at it, and it was a 20 gauge. And she said, no, put that one back. So I put it back. So predominantly all the guns were in the gun room or playroom.
Right. I sort of an aside, briefly, do you hunt with Alec over the years?
I have.
And did he have a go-to gun, to your knowledge, that he would use?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. When's the last time you ever seen him hunt with a 12-gauge?
You know, I'd say that when he bird hunt, he's either shooting a 20-gauge or a 28. There was a time, and please don't ask me when, but I would say it was a few years prior to this that we were turkey hunting on another piece of property down on the Savannah River. And I know he was hunting with a 12-gauge then, but I don't know whether it was his gun or somebody else's.
Did that gun have a sticker on it, do you remember?
It did. And
do you remember what the sticker said?
No, I don't remember what the sticker said, but I do remember teasing Alec that when you're turkey hunting, you don't want to be seen, and, you know, big sticker on the side of your barrel is kind of like waving a white flag to a turkey.
Did did you serve as somewhat of a liaison or the point person with SLED and the family initially?
I don't know that I'd call it a liaison or a point person, but I absolutely I'd become to know Agent David Owens, and I absolutely told David, I said, listen, if you need anything from me or anybody and you can't get in touch with them, you reach out to me. I will either see to it that they call you back, I will see to it that you get the answers that you're looking for, or I will put you in touch with the person you're trying to reach. So I did make myself available.
And did Alec give, to your knowledge, carte blanche to law enforcement to search anywhere that they wished?
Oh, he did. In fact, before I was going to just do something, you know, I knew that to be the case, but yes, he confirmed it with me. Anything they needed, anytime they needed it.
And you provided consent to search the house the afternoon on the 8th on his behalf, did you not?
I did. And I've consented every time they've ever asked.
We'll get to that. Were you ever asked to provide consent or see if you could obtain consent for any law enforcement to search your mom's house where Alec had been the night before?
Say that to me one more time.
Did any law enforcement ask you to consent or obtain consent so that law enforcement could search Almeda, and I'm talking about on the 8th, because Alec had just been there the night before?
Right.
Did anybody ask you, hey, can we go search Almeda?
No one asked anything.
Okay. If asked, would you have obtained consent for law enforcement?
I would have given them consent, and I would have taken them over there just like I did at Alec's house, and I would have helped facilitate the search to show them areas that they may not know about.
Did you remember law enforcement SLED agents coming to your Greenfield property on June the 10th?
Yes, sir, I did.
And what was that about?
I assume they coordinated it with Alec or Randy. I'm not sure who they coordinated it with, but yes, my understanding is they were coming to interview me, Randy, Alec, Buster. I think that's it. But they wanted to do interviews with all of us.
Okay. And did everyone congregate there at Greenfield?
Yes, sir. We were at Greenfield. Of course, you know, that's we're staying there because of all this, and so it keeps me close to Hampton. So, but yes, we all congregated there.
And when the agents arrived, did they come inside and sit down and talk with each other of you, or how did that work?
No, sir. I offered them to come inside. It was, as you can imagine, it was hot. I said, come in, and, you know, offered them a drink of water, whatever, just being polite. And they said, no, you know, we would like to go ahead and start our interviews.
And where did the interviews take place?
In their cars.
And were they all done it simultaneously?
Yes, sir.
And how many SLED agent cars were out there? Do you remember?
Well, there was one for each person they were interviewing, and I would go ahead and guess that there were probably two or three more.
Okay. And I'm not sure that we need to actually play this, but have you been in the courtroom and you've heard this audio tape of Alec being interviewed on that June the 10th? Where he states something, either I did him so bad or they did him so bad. Have you heard that?
I have.
And you know Alec's voice?
I know his voice very well.
And what is he saying on that tape?
Crystal clear, they did him so bad.
I mean, have you heard him say that before his interview that day?
You know, I think I heard him say it either the night of or the day after. But I've also heard him say it many times after.
Well before this trial started or anything?
Well before any of this, that's right. When he was staying and living with us, or between my brother and us.
After Maggie and Paul were murdered on that night of June 7th, were you or other family members with Alec for the most part, you know, for that week and the week after that?
You're talking about the days following?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I was. I made a conscious effort to be with him. I mean, as devastating as it was for me, it was 1,000 times worse for him. So I knew as a brother I needed to be there for him. And I was. Of course, I didn't sleep with him, but right. But when we were awake, I may not be standing beside him, but we would be in the room together. If we needed to go to the gas station, if he wanted dip, I'd ride with him. I just thought that's what I needed to do.
What was his demeanor that's in the immediate aftermath of these murders?
Oh, Jimmy. That night or days or
that night, the next day, the day after.
Like I just said, he is when you can use words that he was destroyed. I heard somebody say he was broken. You can use any word you want to use to describe, but I can promise you, words don't do it justice. I would have to create a new word to describe how distraught he was. It's terrible.
And to carry it forward all through the summer, did he, how was he coping afterwards, say, later June and July and going forward?
You know, it's hard to tell. I thought he was doing okay. Other times it would just be just sheer grief. I mean, just uncontrollably crying and just, you know, of course it makes me cry. As y'all can tell, I'm a pretty emotional guy, but we would cry together. And there's no answers. And there's nothing I could say to make it better other than just hugging.
Did you start losing weight?
Oh, yes, sir. Absolutely.
Was he eating?
Well,
sleeping?
He was pretty heavy going into this.
Right.
And he lost a good bit of weight. I don't know how many pounds, but it became very obvious in a fairly short period of time he lost weight.
Right. I skipped over something in my outline. I apologize. But going back on the evening of June 7th, early morning hours, Did folks who were there at Almeda raise questions about perhaps the murder? Maggie and Paul were somehow associated with the
Buddy? You mean the Moselle?
Yeah, the Moselle. Going back to on the evening of June 7th and June 8th, the folks at Moselle raise issues or associate the potential motive for the murder to be related to the boating accident in some form?
Well, I heard it. I heard it numerous times that night. I heard it at Moselle, and I actually heard it by, well, Greg, Chief Alexander mentioned it. You know, once I got over the chaotic part of describing what we were doing, why I needed to get to Moselle, he asked me he's driving in front of me, and he asked me, do you think it's related to the boat accident? Of course, I don't know. I don't know anything about what's happened.
Well, you were aware of the boating accident and Paul's charges?
Yes, sir.
Weren't you aware? And was there a backlash in the community over that?
Well, it was. It was a lot of backlash. I would not say quite as much in the community, but as on social media and media inflamed rumors is what the way I would describe it.
Right.
That it was just totally blown out of proportion. And I don't want to downplay the accident, but what they were saying about the stuff about Paul and Alec, it was just totally inflamed. And you asked about the boating accident. So I told y'all that I called Michael Paul, my friend, to make sure I could go to the crime scene the next morning. Well, Michael Paul is one of my best friends, if not my best friend. I called him that night while we were still down at the crime scene, not because he's in law enforcement, not because of anything, because he's my friend. And I actually told him on the phone. I said, MP is what I called. I said, MP, I don't even know why I called you. I just needed to talk to somebody. And we talked and, you know, cried a little bit after I described. He didn't know what had happened. So I told him and, you know, I cried and he, you could tell he was upset. But in that conversation, he asked me also, do you think it could be related to the boating accident?
Switching gears a little bit, John Marvin, when talking about visiting at your mom's house, mom and dad's house, let's talk. Where do you routinely park, or where do you park sometimes when going over to your mom and dad's house?
Me, you're asking where I park?
You and others, you know, in the family.
Well, it's a couple of places you can park, depending on who's there, whether there's other cars there. You know, you can either park at the, what you call the carport, and there's a big dirt area beside it. You can park there, walk up to the side door, or you can pull around to the back corner, park there. You know, we all use both spots.
I'm going to pull up and look at it on your screen.
As a matter of fact, I told you it's my mom's birthday. I went there yesterday. I pulled right into the back of the house, but I didn't turn around. I circled the house. Okay. So there's.
So I'm going to pull up State's Exhibit 524. It's in evidence, Doug, and go to slide 38. And this is the GPS OnStar data. And Doug, if you'll blow up around the house, please, sir. Thank you. Mr. Murdoch, this is your mom's house, and this is GPS data from the night of June the 7th. Do you see that the red line there?
Yeah, it's pretty blurry on my screen. I don't know about y'all's.
Well, you want to back it out a little bit, Doug? All right. Is that better?
Well, yes, it's still blurry, but I can see.
Where is that in relation to your mom's house?
You're talking about the right there where the arrow's pointing?
Yes, sir.
That is at the back corner of the house.
Okay.
That would be exactly where I parked yesterday.
Sorry. And if you'll pull up, Doug, Exhibit 136. And this would be Defendant's Exhibit 136 in evidence. tell me where that is?
That's the same area. That's what I'm talking about.
Is that the same area that we just saw on the last exhibit with the red dots?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Generally speaking, I mean, there's no, it's such a wide open area, so when you pull up, you're not like pulling into the exact same spot each time to where you're creating a road or whatnot. It's just a nice grassy area. You pull up, go up to the back door, and you're right there at the back of the house.
And why do you go to the back of the house?
That's when my dad was alive. There's a little breakfast room there with a recliner in it. He was either in that recliner, at the table eating, in the bed, or not at home. I mean, that literally was his.
Right. So Doug, if you pull up, defendant's 135.
So everything's at the back of the house.
Right.
I mean, it's a large home, and they just don't, you know, as old as they are, well, my mom can't get out of bed, but as old as they are, they don't go to the front.
I'm sorry, just skip that. 131, defendant's 131 in evidence, please. Again, is this sort of the same area photographed from a different direction?
Yes, sir.
Now, what's that structure that we see in the background past that big oak tree?
That was my dad's cookhouse, or man cave, as some people would call it. That's
okay.
Yeah.
And how far is that from the house, roughly?
You know, I would guess 60 to 80 yards.
Okay. And that's... And is it open around there? I mean, from the photo, is that accurate?
Oh, it's absolutely.
Right.
That whole area is a grassy area with oak trees and pecan trees.
So, Marvin, I want to go to Labor Day weekend of 2021. Where were you that weekend? Do you remember?
Labor Day weekend 21.
When Alec went to the hospital?
Okay, yeah. Oh, yes. So I'd been out west fishing, and I came in on Saturday night.
Okay. And prior to Labor Day weekend 2021, were you aware as to whether or not Alec had an opioid addiction?
No, sir.
Did you transport Alec, drive Alec, from the hospital in Savannah to a detox facility in Atlanta that weekend? Or?
Well, I believe it would have been on that Monday. I was not driving. Randy and I took him. Randy was driving, and I was in the back. But yes, sir, we did take him to a detox facility.
And where was the facility located?
Just outside of Atlanta.
Okay. And what was, can you describe for the jury Alec's condition, like physical condition in the car?
Yes, sir. So when I met Randy over in Savannah, he had Alec, and I got in the car, or Randy's truck with him. I'd never seen anything like it. I've seen television shows of talking about the leg twitching and the squirminess, if you will. And that's the first thing. I mean, you could just tell he was sweating. He was thrashing about, you know, Jim, I don't know how much detail you want me to go into.
What, did he turn around in the seat of the car, and what was he doing?
Yeah, so maybe halfway there, at one point, he had taken his seatbelt off, and he had his head down where your fanny would be in the seat, and is trying to stretch his legs and just kind of steady, just like thrashing them and kicking them. It's just, again, I've seen TV, but I've never seen something like this in real life.
And was he able to control himself?
No, sir. I said about detail. So he messed himself. He had diarrhea. He just couldn't control it.
And then...
And I say diarrhea, I'm not talking about at a restroom. I'm talking about in the car, in his pants.
Okay. And after he spent some time in the facility in Atlanta, did you and your brother go pick him up and take him to another facility in Orlando, Florida?
Yes, sir, we did.
Do you remember that?
Yes, sir, I did.
On the drive to Orlando, do you remember anything happened that stands out to you?
You know, so that drive, he was much different. He was more subdued. It was not the thrashiness, not the twitching, not the jerkiness, if you will. I don't know the words that you would use for that, but that's what I'm saying. The only thing that really stood out for me is he slept a lot of the time, but he woke up from sleeping. And when he woke up, I mean, he jerked forward and you could just tell that, I mean, it was sheer terror. He just woke up out of a horrible, horrible dream. And I believe it was him dreaming about what he found with Paul and Maggie.
Keep going a little further, Mr. Murdoch. And sometime in September, did SLED actually come and search the house at Alameda?
Yes, sir.
And were you present?
I was.
Okay, were you informed as to what items were seized during that search?
I was informed of one item that was seized.
And what item was that?
It was described as a coat.
What kind of coat?
Well, they didn't tell me what kind of coat.
Okay. And and did they tell you where the coat was found?
Yes, sir. So I would assume that the searching of the house, all that was winding down. So Agent David Owens and I believe Randy was outside near us, but he may have been talking to somebody else. I'm not sure. May have been talking to another agent. I'm not sure. But David Owens, or Agent Owens, came up to me and said, we found a coat back on the property. Do you know anything about it? And I said, well, David, I said, if you found it back on the property, I said, it's a large piece of property, you know, some 400-something acres. I said, my dad rides this Kubota side by side. It's probably his. And I said, and if you show it to me, I can try to identify it. And of course, he said he couldn't show it to him or wouldn't show it to me. I'm not sure what it was.
Were you sometime later asked to view a photo of a blue raincoat?
I was. Well, I was asked to view a raincoat and listen to an audio tape.
Of the kennel?
Yes, sir.
Okay. On the blue raincoat, were you informed where it was seized from?
Well, I knew where it was seized from because he had already told me. But I was, in this instance, I was told that they wanted us to, or when I say us, they asked Randy, Lynn, and I to go view the coat and the tape. At this point, I knew where it had been recovered, but they said, we want you to view a coat that had been recovered out of a closet.
And was that different from what you were led to believe when you?
Oh, absolutely.
Had you ever, did they ever provide anybody provide an explanation about why you were giving two different locations where a coat was found?
To this day, no one's told me that.
The photo of the coat that they showed you, had you ever seen that raincoat before?
No, sir.
Or was it the blue raincoat that?
Well, it certainly looked similar to the one. I saw a picture. I didn't see the coat itself. But it certainly looked to be similar or the same.
Had you ever seen it before?
No, sir.
Did you recognize what closet it came out of from photos during this trial?
Well, I saw that. I think I know what closet they're referring to.
The closet as you go up on the first flight of stairs before you go at the landing right there. It's what's kept there?
Clothing, not everyday clothing that's more or less in storage. junk. You know, it's not a club. It's not a club. First of all, my dad wouldn't climb stairs even if he could, but he couldn't.
Right. The there's some testimony that there's GSR on that rain coat. Got any idea how there could be GSR on clothing in your dad's closet at Alameda?
Objection.
No idea.
Stained.
Did your dad carry guns around with him?
No, not like not in the sense that you're saying. So he was not like Paul that always had guns with him. You know, he would keep a gun if he went dove hunting, for example. And he went on one dove hunt. That gun may ride with him for 2 months. He just would stay. He just would. Same with golf clubs. If he went back when he would play golf, he just
during
a bunch of junk in his truck.
During hunting season, was there normally a gun in the back seat?
During hunting season, I would say that there usually would be.
And did he?
In fact, during hunting season, because he always hunt. He always loved to go on a bird hunt.
And did he have a specific gun that he used frequently?
Oh, he had one gun.
And was did that gun have a name?
It did. It was called Bo Whoop.
And did he clean it often?
I've never seen him clean it. He got that gun in 1957 for his high school graduation, and he used it for every game that he chased. But I'm sure it got cleaned somewhere along the way, but I'd never seen him clean it, and I still haven't seen him clean it.
Got it.
I don't know how the thing still worked.
Along the way, have you been receiving updates from SLED on their investigation in the Maggie and Paul's murder?
Usually when I call, I would call Agent Owens and ask for updates, and he would try to provide some updates. It almost always seemed like there was stuff that he really, I don't know whether he didn't know or just wasn't at liberty to say at the time, I'm not sure. But yeah, he would try to give updates as best as possible.
And would you provide an information on evidence that they had against your brother?
I have been, yes, sir.
Has
some of it.
And the information, some of the information that you've been provided turned out not to be accurate information?
Yes, sir.
What type of information?
Well, I was told that at one point that there was a T-shirt that he was wearing. And can I back up and tell you how we got into this conversation?
Sure.
So I'm having a meeting with SLED.
Yes, sir. Nature of the drug.
Call for your sir.
Statement of an opponent, Your Honor. Agent of the statement of a party opponent.
Party opponent.
Agent of the party opponent. Yes, sir.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have you take a break now. Please do not discuss the case. All right, everybody be seated. Hear this objection again.
Says objecting, calls for hearsay.
Right. And your response to the Mr. Yeah.
Yes, Your Honor.
Just a moment, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Conrad's response to Mr. Griffin.
Your Honor, I think his argument was it's an admission by a party opponent. And I don't think we're talking about
Party opponent.
Right. And the subsection 801D2, I think, is what we're referencing. And it talks about admission by a party opponent. It doesn't necessarily talk about the statement. And I think what we're getting into are some statements by particular law enforcement officers who've already been on the stand, and I don't think those are admissions to any issue that's of relevance in this case.
Griffin?
Your Honor, directly relevant. The statements relate to evidence that they've told the family they have against Mr. Murdoch.
Directly relevant?
Yes, sir.
So the objection is not based on relevance.
Well, I thought that's what. So a statement of a party opponent is non-hearsay under the definition of hearsay. Your Honor, it's. I don't have the rule in front of me, but under.
The state of South Carolina is a party opponent in this case?
And SLED is the investigative agency? Yes, sir. If otherwise, the rule would not apply in a criminal case. It has to be the investigative agency. I'm not asking for Collin County statements or it's the.
No, you've gotten those in already, newspaper statements. Collin County's call to the newspaper or whatever.
Yes, sir.
What else, Mr. Conrad?
I'd also object for the relevance as well, Your Honor, because the state has not offered the shirt and evidence, and the defense is attempting to kind of backdoor here, and it simply doesn't go to any issue, anything that's issued in this trial.
He's already testified to the shirt.
Well, to the shirt, but he's trying to get evidence. And maybe we need to proffer it to see exactly what he would say, but my assumption was that he was going to start talking about a report by Mr. Bevel, which we've talked about several times in this case, and I'd object to the relevance and to particularly with Mr. Murdoch bringing it up.
All right. But tell me again what you're asking the witness.
Proffer
it to the witness. Yes.
Yes. So, Mr. Murdoch, what information were you provided by was it a SLED agent that provided you the information?
Yes.
You were asking him about Agent Owens. He's a SLED agent. Yes.
And what information were you provided that leading up to this that turns out to be inaccurate?
Right. And if it's okay for me to speak for you.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. So what I was asking, I was saying. I wanted to back up to get to where I was getting this information. So I'd been called to SLED, not headquarters, but their office in Waldenburg to view the blue coat and to listen to an audio. After my interview with them, Captain Ryan Neal, I believe we were in his office, is the one that. And I'm going to use my terminology here, but describe the white T-shirt covered in blood, even went so far as to describe that Alec took the bottom of it and wiped his face with it, and that's how they knew he was involved. That's how they knew he was there. And I don't know where the question goes.
Can
after
I
that.
Answer your question, or are you trying to dig more out of him?
That's it.
All right, and what's your objection?
I renew my objection to the relevance. Nothing has been put. This jury hasn't heard any evidence about any blood being on this T-shirt, and the state has not offered any reports to suggest as such.
The objection is overruled. It's going to take 10 minutes.
Thank you.
The jury is present, sir.
All right, thank you. The objection is overruled.
Thank you, Mr. Murdoch. When we broke, the question on the table was about a conversation that you had with a SLED agent regarding some matter of evidence. Can you provide your answer, please, sir?
Yes. So as I was about to say, what led me to this conversation was that SLED asked my brother, my sister, and I to come over to identify or attempt to identify a coat and a recording. And we did that. And so I did my interview with them. And then after the interview, we went into Captain Ryan Neal's, I think he's captain, but Agent Ryan Neal's office at this, at the same SLED office. And in that office, or in that, in his office, we were all in there. They made reference to the shirt that they said Ellick was wearing. They told us that it was covered in blood. They went so far as to tell me on the police body cam that he takes his shirt and wipes his face. And that's how they knew that Ellick was at the scene, that, that he was the one.
So, Marvin, just finishing up, what was Alec's relationship with Maggie and Paul's parents, Grandma and Papa T, as we've heard?
Grandma and Papa T, that's great. They had a great relationship. Ellick and Papa T played golf together regularly. I mean, it just it's just a really good father-in-law, son-in-law relationship, and mother-in-law.
And have you?
They would travel together, you know, vacation together with different places.
And have you stayed in contact with them as best you could?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
We communicate.
And just
briefly. Now, Papa T has taken ill and is homebound now.
I was going to ask you. He's
he's had a stroke and is basically homebound.
Okay.
And Miss Kennedy stays at home and takes care of him. But they are wonderful people. Let me just go a little bit further. Wonderful people in and of themselves, but their relationship was absolutely great.
Jamar, I want to go back to that morning of June the 8th when you were down at the kennel cleaning up. Do you remember making a promise that morning?
Well, Jim, as I've told y'all, that y'all know what I saw, y'all know what I was doing. It was difficult. It was nearly impossible. In my mind and out loud, I told Paul I loved him. I told him, I loved him, and I promised him that I'd find out who did this to him. You just don't know what to do, but it was tough.
And you promised him you would find out who did this to him?
Yes, sir, I did.
Have you found out?
I have not.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. That's all the questions I have.
Please support. Good afternoon, Mr. Murdaugh.
Good afternoon.
I think you'd agree with me that no matter which way you cut it, your family suffered a great tragedy, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
And
including the death of my dad and the sickness of my mom. I mean, it's tough.
And I'm sorry you and your family's been through this.
Well, thank you.
All right. And I think you testified a little while ago about the cooperation you and particularly your brother provided SLED. Is that correct?
Did I provide cooperation with SLED?
Yes.
Absolutely.
And to your knowledge,
I have and will continue to. All
right. And to your knowledge, your brother was providing cooperation to SLED as well, correct?
I believe everyone in my family was. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. And would you consider that cooperation full cooperation? Not only for yourself, but your brother as well, from what you have observed?
I mean, to me, full cooperation, yeah. I mean, it's wide open. You tell us what you need from me, and I'll provide it. And I told him I would provide it.
And from what you've observed, your brother was providing the same full cooperation as well, correct?
Yeah, so I believe any time that they ask to search something, any time they ask to do something, they ask for information, it typically came to me, and yes, I would provide it.
Okay, I'm asking about your brother right now. I understand you have, but to your knowledge, did your brother provide full cooperation, or did he tell you he was providing full cooperation?
Well, he didn't tell me, but it appeared to be obvious that by him giving them access to anything they asked for, that he was.
Okay. So when did you first learn that your brother was down at the kennels just before the murders? 2 days ago with the rest of us?
No. You know, so obviously I went into for an interview with SLED, the one I told you about where we talked about the shirt, talked about the blood, all that. That was the reason for me being there, was to hear that audio. And I saw the kennel, and of course, at that point, I heard his voice, and I knew that was him.
Okay. You knew that was him when you saw that video, correct?
That's correct.
Or listened to the video.
When I listened to it.
Right. And do you recall the date of that interview when you first listened to that video?
I do not.
All right. Would you disagree with me if I said it was August 12th of 2022?
I have no way to agree or disagree.
Or at least during the month of August of 2022?
Again, I'm sure they have my interview recorded for that date, but...
All right. Before August of 2022, at that interview when you heard your brother's voice at the kennels, had he ever told you that he was down there just prior to the murders?
No, sir.
Did he ever tell you that afterwards, after you listened to that video?
No, sir. And I'm trying to think if we've been able to have an opportunity to even speak.
Okay. All right. So you would agree that if he had not told SLED that was not full cooperation, correct? If he had not told SLED that he was at the kennels just before the murders, he had not actually been fully cooperative.
What's your question?
Would you agree that that is not full cooperation?
By him not telling SLED that he was at the kennel?
Correct.
I would say that yes, he lied.
Okay. All right, so I don't want to go through the whole kind of vehicle shell game that we talked about earlier. It's confusing probably to me most of all, but let's just focus on, what was Paul's normal daily driver? What vehicle did he drive on a daily basis?
On a normal basis, he drove a white F-150 Platinum.
Okay.
And let me confuse you a little bit more. Okay. As I drive the identical truck.
Okay. All right. So you testified that Paul's F-150 Platinum was at Jimmy Butler's over the weekend, correct?
It was being worked on at Jimmy Butler's, that's correct.
And then Monday there's a series of car swaps. I don't want to go through them, but at the end of the day, you end up in the F-250 farm truck, correct?
That's correct.
Right. And Paul ends up in your F-150 Platinum.
Ultimately, he does. He drives a mom's car back to Alameda.
Right. I know there's several swaps.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
I'm just kind of talking at the end of the day. And he drove your F-150 back to Moselle, that night, correct?
To Moselle, yes, sir. Right.
You testified that you came over later that night after Alex had called you about the murders, correct?
That's correct.
Where was your truck parked when you first got there? And we'll talk about how you got there in a minute, but where was Paul's truck?
Well, so first of all, that night.
Your truck, I'm sorry.
That's right. I know what you're saying. So when I got there, we didn't go anywhere near the house. I went straight to where everything was happening.
Okay.
As we went to the house later that night, I saw my truck. So it's probably 4 in the morning, whatever time we were, 3 or 4 in the morning. Mm-hmm. It was parked in front of the house, normally where you would park cars.
Okay. So just kind of out straight out the front door?
That's correct.
And the keys that Paul had been using, do you recall, were they left in the truck or have any recollection of where those keys might have ended up?
Well, they were sitting in the ignition. I mean, same place I always leave them.
Okay.
Because I drove it to Alameda that night.
All right. And meanwhile, you were in that F-250 farm truck, right?
For a short period of time.
And that, refresh my memory, was that white as well? Or
it's
that
it's white as well, yes, sir.
And it's broke down on you on the way to Moselle, correct?
That is correct, on Highway 63.
All right. And you left it on the side of the road, correct?
I did.
Okay. And I think, did you call Chief Alexander at that point? Or?
Well, we were riding, you know, we were driving separate cars, but together.
Okay.
And so at that point, he had gotten in front of me, and I had to call him to tell him to turn around.
Okay. And he came back and picked you up?
Came back, and I jumped in his car.
You left the truck
or whatever. It was Suburban.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to talk over you. My apologies. And you left the F-250 there on the side of the road?
I did.
Okay. All right. And rode with Chief Alexander to the property?
That's correct.
All right. Were you aware that your brother Alex had loaned Chief Alexander money at several points over the past couple of years?
I was not.
Okay. All right. And you testified that you learned of your brother's opioid addiction the weekend of Labor Day of 2021. Is that correct?
That's when it started coming out, yes, sir.
Okay. So did you have any idea that he had a opioid or drug problem prior to that?
Prior to that, I did not.
Okay. So from your observations of him on a daily basis, he seemed to be sober at most times or not under the influence of any? Did you ever observe him?
Well, keep in mind now, so again, I'm not a lawyer in the firm. I live in Beaufort, so I don't see him daily.
Okay.
But our encounters usually would be during non-working hours. Mm-hmm. But even then, yes, I had no reason to think he was on pills.
Okay. All right. He's able to function pretty normally on a daily basis, to your observations?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay. So let's talk about the morning of June 8th. You said that you were the first person over to the house at Moselle that morning. Did I understand that
correctly?
That's correct. And you're the first person inside the house at that point?
That's correct.
Okay. And so do you recall when Blanca Simpson got there?
I don't.
Okay.
What I can tell you is I was the last to leave the house and the first to come back in.
So she would have gotten there some point after you?
Yes, sir. And I've heard in testimony that instead of going to Moselle, she went to Alameda.
Mm-hmm. But when she came to Moselle, it would have been after you, correct?
I think the other folks were there as well. Yeah, but well after me.
Okay. And you testified about being in that, I guess some folks call it the gun room, when Slade came in and started looking at some of those guns in the gun room, correct?
That's correct. Well, I wasn't in the gun room. I was in the main part of the house.
Okay. Did you ever go into the gun room while Sled was in
there? I did.
Okay. Because I think there's a video and evidence, and we're not going to go dig it up, but of Sled with body camera footage, and I think you do appear a bit.
I think so. I think probably what best recollection I have is I was in the main part of the house with Alec and family, and someone came and told me they were there and that they wanted to look around.
Okay.
And of course, I went to make sure that they had full access.
When you were in there, do you recall who was in there with you other than the SLED agents? Because there were several other people, correct?
Well, I don't recall. Without seeing the video, I saw the video. I saw Mark Ball. I saw Lee Cope. I saw the agent McAllister. But I don't think I would have remembered that.
Okay. But there are several attorneys in there, though, at a minimum, correct?
Friends and attorneys. Friends. Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Was Chris Wilson in there at that time?
You know, I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't have any recollection of him being there.
Okay. All right. And then let's go to June 10th when Slade came over to, I believe it was Greenfield where they came.
That's correct.
To interview. It was you, Buster, Randy, Alex. I guess that's four, right? Is that all who were interviewed that day to your recollection?
Randy, me, Alec, and Buster. That's correct.
Okay. I think you testified that they didn't want to come inside. Is that what you testified to?
Well, I don't think they didn't want to come inside because of any particular reason. I just think they wanted to get about their business.
So you don't recall?
I offered for them. I offered to come in, use the restroom, anything of that nature, drink water, anything like that. But they,
okay. You don't
they did not.
You don't recall Lieutenant Gent coming in and introduce himself?
Inside the lodge? I do not.
Okay. All right. And you've either been interviewed or sat in several interviews by Sled over the last few years, correct?
I've been in a few, yes, sir.
Okay. And I'm going to direct your attention to October 12th of 2010. Let me make sure I have that date correct. Or excuse me, not 2010. That would have been 2021. And I believe Sled came to your house that day. Do you recall that?
I do recall Sled coming to my house.
Okay.
I can't tell you that's the date, but they certainly came.
This would have been the day that they interviewed both Buster and your wife that day. Does that help you out?
It does. I remember them coming. It was Jeff, Agent Croft, and I believe Agent Ryan Kelly.
Okay. You sat into both those interviews, correct, with both Buster and your wife?
Well, I think the interview with one was an interview for Buster,
okay.
And one was an interview with me and my wife.
Okay. All right. So you
thought, that's the way I thought it was.
Okay.
I didn't think it was three interviews.
All right. And do you recall during that October 12th interview the subject of this blue jacket coming up with Buster. Specifically, I'm talking about the one with Buster.
The conversation at my house?
Yes.
I do not recall it coming up.
You don't recall Sled bringing up, asking Buster about the blue jacket on October 12th?
I do not recall that.
So you don't recall his response?
I don't recall him bringing up a jacket.
Okay. Do you recall Buster responding that he did not recognize the blue jacket that was presented to him?
I don't recall a blue jacket being discussed.
Okay. And I think you also looked at it, and you don't recall?
They did not show me a blue jacket. There was no blue jacket discussion in that interview, to my knowledge.
Okay. Do you recall Buster's response in that interview to being asked if that could be Randolph's jacket, to him saying if it's over $15, no, it wasn't?
Objection, Your Honor. Hearsay what Buster said. He's asking to recall what Buster said.
I sustain the objection.
And then you agreed with what Buster said right afterwards. You don't recall that?
No, Mr. Conner. What I'm telling you is I don't recall any discussions of a blue jacket in that interview. I just don't recall that. I don't. So you asking me that, I'm just telling you I don't know of any discussions about a jacket in that interview.
Okay. All right. You testified about driving up to rehab, I think that Monday after Labor Day, or excuse me, detox, correct?
It was detox, that's correct.
And you said your brother kind of woke up startling as if from a dream. Is that what you testified to?
No, sir. Okay. I said that when I was driving, well, Randy and I were driving him from detox to the rehab facility down, and that was down in Orlando, Florida, is when that happened.
All right. And you said, and again, I wanted to make this as clear as we can, you said you thought that he was waking up in response to a dream about the night of June 7th. Is that, do I understand that correctly?
That is the way that's what it appeared to be to me. And that's, okay. Of course, I can't tell you what he was dreaming, okay. But that's certainly what it appeared to me.
So you're not saying that because he said that, right?
That's right. Okay. He didn't wake up and say that. It was just such a startling, just the way he woke up out of his sleep. It was just so startling. It was fear. It took him several seconds to realize that whatever he just saw was not real, or was not, he was not living it.
Okay. You testified about the day of June 7th and the taking your dad to the hospital, him getting admitted, correct?
I did.
And that you and your brother Randy were sending out multiple group texts about your dad's status. Is that correct?
Well, I sent a text, and I believe Randy sent one as well.
Okay. And
along with phone calls. I know Randy and I discussed it on the phone as well.
And if I understood your testimony correctly, and you said that June 7th is actually kind of a hopeful day. Is that based off of what the doctors were saying?
Well, yes. Based on all the bad news that he's been receiving, it was one little piece of hope that, you know, certainly if the doctor would have said at that point, you know, you're going home on hospice tomorrow, it would have been, that would be the worst case. But him saying that there was hope that it was pneumonia and not the cancer, that there was some breathing treatments that may help, it gave us some hope.
And you sent out at least one group text with this information, correct, to your family members, right?
I know I sent one. I could have sent another, but I know there was one.
Okay. And do you recall if your brother was included in that? Alex, specifically, was included?
You know, I saw the record showing it, and so, yes. Okay. I believe it was my family, and I think it was just our family, actually.
Mm-hmm. And so there was hope, at least on the afternoon of June 7th, that your dad, who had pneumonia, which could potentially be treated, and there was a little bit of hope about that, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So if your brother had told Janine Seckinger during that day that your dad was taking a major turn of the worse, that would not be truthful, correct?
That would be correct. And the testimony I heard is he didn't say that.
He didn't say what?
He didn't say it was terminal or dire or whatever, what? Whatever you're saying.
Are you based off of Alex's testimony?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So if Janine Seckinger...
So, well, I can tell you this. If somebody said that day that it was terminal, one of two people was wrong, or both.
Okay. All right. So if Janine Seckinger was told that...
If Janine Seckinger said that, she was wrong.
Well, were you present for any conversations between your brother and Janine Seckinger on June 7th?
I wasn't.
One last thing, Mr. Murdaugh. Would you say that the Murdaugh name and legacy is something that's important to you and your brothers?
Yes, I think any family's name and legacy is important to them. Do I think my family's name is more important than yours or any of y'all's? No, I don't.
Okay. But it's important to your brother as well, correct?
I think he would feel the exact same way as what I just said, that that all families are important.
Okay. No problem. No.
Any redirect?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. You may step down.
Defense rests, Your Honor.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is the defense's case. And we will excuse you for this day and have you come back at 9:30 tomorrow morning. Good evening. If everyone will be seated. The defense has rested. Any matters of law at this time?
Your Honor, we would defense would just renew our motion for directed verdict on the grounds previously argued at the close of the state's case. That's
all. Mr. Waters.
Your Honor, again, we would rely on our arguments previously made that the motion should be denied. Be happy to answer any specific issues Your Honor may have, but I would rely on our previous arguments.
All right. The motion is denied based on all the reasons stated at the close of the state's case. Now, with regard to reply, what do you have, Mr. Waters?
Yes, sir. We have... maybe four witnesses, maybe five at this point in time. I'm hopeful that we could accomplish that in a day. Obviously, as is the nature of reply, we will, you know, assess that tonight. But right now I have four definite witnesses and perhaps a fifth that, as it stands right now, that we would have. I don't think many of them, except for one, would be very lengthy. And by lengthy, I don't mean exceptionally so.
Any comment, Mr. Harpootlian or Mr.
Your Honor, I'm no way critical of Mr. Waters, but his estimate of time has been a little... mushy, I think, is a good way to put it. I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying this was going to be a three-week trial, and now it's a six-week trial. I'm just a little skeptical that we'll get it all done tomorrow. I'm just saying I'll be happy, I'll be ecstatic if it happens, but for planning purposes, perhaps maybe midday Wednesday would be a better. Pardon me? Oh, and somewhere in this process, Your Honor's indicated you'd allow the jury to visit the site.
At
so
the close of the reply.
Okay. So we're at, I guess, Mr. Waters' mercy.
Mr. Waters, are these witnesses who you anticipate will contradict issues presented by the defense or address the credibility of matters raised by the defense?
It will be focused on issues that were raised during the defense case, yes, sir.
All right. Okay. Well, 9:30 tomorrow morning.
Thank you, Ron.
Have a good evening.
That wraps up segment number 5 in our continuing coverage of the trial of Alec Murdaugh. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of our breaking updates and discussions on the case. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Missing minerals? 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps restore what your body's missing, naturally supporting mood, energy, and immunity. Get yours now at TraceMinerals.com. You eat well, you work out, but did you know 99% of Americans are still mineral deficient? That's where Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder comes in. It's your daily foundation for better mood, natural energy, immune support, and nervous system balance. Formulated from nature and backed by science, it's a simple habit that makes a big impact. Because your body doesn't make minerals, and today's food and water don't supply enough, with Concentrace, you'll feel the difference. Go to TraceMinerals.com and start with minerals. Start with Concentrace. Missing minerals? 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps restore what your body's missing, naturally supporting mood, energy, and immunity. Get yours now at TraceMinerals.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now a leading cause of declining mental health, with 61% of the global workforce feeling it more than ever. You can't escape work, but you can take small steps to care for yourself. A walk, some sun, a favorite song. Therapy is one of those steps, ongoing support to build resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com today for 10% off your first month.